Welcome to one of Kathy Frey's Motherwise podcasts. Kathy is a best-selling maternity author and award-winning international maternity consultant. During her time as a midwife, she's caught hundreds of babies. So you're in good hands. Enjoy.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this webinar, and it also is a podcast today. And what we're going to be talking about at this Kathy Frey's Motherwise little class today is particularly when you hit the over halfway mark. So you've clicked over 20 weeks in your gestation. And that's a pretty significant, exciting time. Now, and what is it that you should be doing and thinking about at this stage? Because there's a whole heap, so have a pen and paper ready. All right, so firstly, often I do hear women say, oh, yay, I'm over halfway. Now, if it's your first pregnancy, well, if it's your second pregnancy, you'll know I'm correct when I say this. But just for those with the first pregnancy, it's probably, to be honest, better described as not really halfway. You are halfway gestationally. Yeah, not really halfway on the journey. Probably more like a third of kind of, you know, the mountain that has to get climbed through the course of the pregnancy. You could kind of say it almost that the first third is like 0 to 2 to 20 weeks, and the next third is getting you up to about 32 weeks, and then the next third is getting you to 40 weeks or thereabouts. That's kind of more how it feels as a pregnant woman when you're going through the journey. Okay, but yeah, there is quite a lot that you really should be doing right now to particularly save having to do later. And there's also things that you should be aware of now, because once you get to 24, 25, 26 weeks, especially onwards, you really do have a viable baby on board if that baby decided to arrive early and 1 in 20 do. So there are things that you should be now getting very well aware of regarding obstetric emergencies. Okay, so I'm just going to refer to my own list because I don't want to miss anything out. All right, so firstly, on your to-do list, go and visit your local birth center and local hospital, or maybe there's only one place for you to go to, but go and have a check out your options. Often the hospitals have birthing suite tours, and often the birth centers will just allow you just to do pop in casual visits, but it's time to go and look them out, check them out, don't leave it to the last minute, and you know, get a familiar understanding of those and their facilities. And that is for those obviously who are not planning to home birth, and that's a whole other little conversation. But even if you are planning to home birth, it is still very, very, very sensible to go and visit the local hospital, because if your baby came early, you won't be home birthing, and you need to be at a hospital where you've got access to NICU or SCABU, neonatal facilities, and it is a lot less scary when you've already been there and you had a tour and you're familiar, especially right down to things like, you know, where's the entrance and how do you get in at 3 o'clock in the morning and all those sorts of things. So you need to know that stuff. Trust me, it's a good idea. Okay, what else on your to-do list? Right, start to really think about what is going to happen in the postnatal period for support for you. So what family are going to be around? Who's going to be around who actually knows their stuff? So who is your girlfriend or family member, auntie or mother, who has successfully establish breastfeeding on 2 or 3 babies at least? Who's that person that can be there with you, helping you successfully establish your baby latch and, you know, getting well fed? Because that is really critical. Start to intentionally go and learn about the art of breastfeeding and the science of lactation. There's an art and science involved, and you need to understand both. So get proactive. You know, this is a whole new job and you need to learn stuff about this job and not leave it. Please, 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 please don't leave it till the baby's arrived to suddenly actually get to know how breastfeeding and lactation works, because, like, you're just setting yourself up for failure, really. you are, or you're definitely setting yourself up for some challenging times. Okay, I would say that about, with first-time mothers, probably about 1 in 20, 1 in 25 maybe, would have no real difficulty, challenges with breastfeeding. That's all. Everybody else has to go on a learning curve, and how steep that curve is often decided by how much knowledge that woman has before she's attempting to breastfeed her baby. Okay, things on your to-do list. Yeah, so that postnatal support, make sure that you've got, like, and if you have other children, if this is not your first baby, you do need to set up support for them as well, or just not really support, babysitting, okay? And if you've got an older child, especially if they're a toddler, then you definitely could have some serious issues. Actually, not just toddlers, but preschoolers too. You can have some serious issues with sibling rivalry going on once that baby arrives, because bear in mind that they have had your complete and undivided attention their entire life. And now they're competing with a squawking, screaming, peeing, pooing being that doesn't even smile or interact with them, that wants mummy's attention for 45 minutes to an hour for feeding every 3 hours. Well, they start, you know, and sometimes the novelty at the beginning is fine, but usually by about day 20 at the latest, often before that, they really start to lose the plot, and they can start to melt down and really misbehave because they're just desperate for attention. And even bad attention is better than no attention. So if your toddler or preschooler is quite clingy at the moment and they need you, you know, like all the time, your job, I would recommend, is that over these next months, you need to get that child to the point where they can play independently, happily, for a good 45 minutes, you know, every couple of hours, so that you can be focusing on your baby and they're not climbing all over you on the couch while you're trying to latch your baby, screaming and whinging and pulling at you, which obviously I've seen a lot of, and makes it really, really challenging. So what I would suggest that you do is actually create a reward system for them. So, you know, incentivize things. That's how the big wide world operates. You know, if you have these X sales at work, you'll get that bonus, and it's a similar thing that you're doing. So, you know, it's kind of like saying, well, if you sit down and play with that jigsaw puzzle for the next half an hour, then you and I are going to go to the dairy and we will get blah, blah. Or if you sit and play with your dollies for the next hour, then you and I are going to bake some cookies. So it's about saying, if you do that on your own, then we will do this together. So all of that, it's almost like thinking of your time together as being a bit of a currency, you know? Do this, get that. I remember my old children, and please don't be offended at me saying this. Please don't go politically correct on me getting offended, because it's my own children who said it to me. And they said, you know, it's like you have to treat them at that age as if you're training a puppy. And they're not wrong. And how do puppies get trained? Because they want to please, they want your attention, and if they sit and stay, they get a treat. And it's a similar thing that you're teaching, okay? Because that's their sort of capacity, you know, at that stage. And so the kids want to please, they want your attention, but you're just going to start to negotiate a little bit on it. The mums who don't do this and don't create that independence in their child before their next baby arrives, wow, they can have some nightmares once the baby arrives. You just want to avoid that. Okay, next on my little list, okay, I really recommend that you, well, actually, this is really critical. You need to get very familiar now with the obstetric concerns and obstetric emergencies that can occur in the at this stage onwards, because you now have a baby that you, if anything happens to this baby early on, you're having a full birth, you know. So we have a viable being on board now. All right, so I want to give you, now this is stuff that you need to check with your own midwife or obstetrician, because your circumstances could be different, and I'm giving you a general overview. So these are the main things that you would have as obstetric emergencies before your term, before your 37 weeks gestation. Threatened placental abruption. All right, and I'm referring to my list because I just hate to miss anything. That's basically when you've got acute, continual abdominal stabbing pain and or vaginal bleeding and or abdominal trauma, say like a fall or a car accident. Now, on saying that, once you get over 37 weeks, if you have a bloody mucus show, that's not an obstetric emergency, but we'll talk about that in a later webinar podcast. But basically, if you are in that sort of from 20 to 24 weeks, right through to before 37 weeks, the signs and symptoms of a threatened placental abruption or an actual placental abruption, this is the placenta coming off the wall of the womb. That's kind of critical because that's, you know, your baby's supply of everything, oxygen, nutrients, all the rest. Okay, so if you get that really acute abdominal pain, or if you get, and it's not an abdominal pain that comes and goes and comes and goes. Those are contractions. No, an abruption is a pain that's there, stays, and if anything, is actually getting worse. Okay. And if you have vaginal bleeding anytime before 37 weeks, especially. Now, if you have a little bit of spotting, a little bit of brown spotting, I don't want you stressing out and going, oh my God, oh my God. I want you to make contact, but don't freak out. But if you did actually have active hemorrhaging, you need to get to a hospital as rapidly as possible because that is life-threatening for both of you. It's rare, okay? I want you to know it's rare, but it is serious. So if you're hemorrhaging, you get as quickly as possible to a hospital. Okay, don't want to freak you out, but it's best you know this stuff. And then obviously, you know, if you do have a fall or an accident or trauma to your abdomen, it is very sensible for you to have that checked out, you know, and go to the local hospital and say, hey, look, I just fell off a ladder. I was painting the baby's room. That's incredibly common. So please be careful. Yeah, and get that checked out, or a car accident. In fact, it's people say, you know, when they're talking about, oh, I shouldn't eat this and shouldn't eat that and shouldn't eat this with their pregnancies, but I can tell you of far more, statistically, of far more danger to an unborn baby than anything the mother is ever eating is her being in a car. Statistically, that's of way more chance of there being a trauma to that baby, just being in a car, driving or passenger. So, but we don't tell women, oh, you can't drive a car because you're pregnant and you can't be in a car or public transport because you're pregnant. We don't say that. But that is true. So it does happen. And if you had an accident, you know, just go and get checked out. They'd put a CTG on you where they have a listen to the baby's heartbeat, maybe do a scan and just make sure that there's nothing traumatic gone on, particularly with the placenta. Okay, threatened premature labor. So this is basically anything from 20 to 37 weeks. So basically if you have regular period-like pains, right? So they might be every 20 minutes, every 10 minutes, every 5 minutes, every half an hour. They might be random, but the point is you have some pain, you don't have pain. You have some pain, you don't have pain. You have some pain, you don't have pain. All right. If that's happening, those are contractions. And you need to go to the hospital, and depending on their protocol, latest research, your gestation, they may give you some medication to actually, which is a muscle relaxant, particularly to help stop your womb contracting, but you need to go in there. Okay, another sign of a threatened premature labor is your amniotic sac rupturing, or in other words, your waters breaking. Now, there's kind of almost in a way two ways that can happen, that sometimes women have what we call a hind water leak, where the baby's head can be usually a bit low and they're just getting this little dribble that just keeps coming. And that means that the waters are not ruptured at the front, right, her cervix, but there's a hole sort of at the back of them. And it sort of dribbles down, and this woman's getting this little dribble leak onto her and making her panties wet. The other thing, way, the symptom that you can have is that your water's full on burst, and you go from completely dry to completely wet, soaking and dribbling. So obviously, if you had this sort of sudden gush of water between your legs that you know is not urine, and it doesn't smell like urine, it actually kind of smells like talcum powder, if you ask me. Anyway, it's sort of a sweeter scent. It's got its own quite distinct smell, but it definitely doesn't smell like urine, and you know you're not weeing, and you've had this big gush of water. So that is your waters rupturing, and it's quite obvious, and you need to go to hospital as soon as possible. We're talking before 37 weeks before your term. The one that is a little bit harder to completely detect is when it's that sort of hind water leak, which often can actually end up repairing itself. Some women can have a hind water leak kind of earlier in the pregnancy, and then it sort of heals itself and it stops. But if you put a sanitary pad on and it just keeps getting a bit wet, it might only be a tablespoon of liquid, you know, every hour or something. It may not be this big gush, because the baby's head is typically acting as a bit of a plug. Or it's because it's the little hole is so far at the back of the amniotic sac that it's just this tiny little dribble that keeps coming out. You still need to get this checked out. And absolutely. So obstetrically, you'd probably be treated as a suspected rupture of membranes, and they would treat you typically with antibiotics, because the main concern at that point is that your baby is no longer in a sterile environment, and they want to make sure that there's no infection enters into the uterus and gets through to the baby. So they sort of treat you like you probably do have a rupture of membrane, rather than thinking, well, maybe she doesn't, and then actually you did. So, and they'll do things like this and measure the actual amount of water around baby and keep a bit of an eye on you. But those are things you need to get checked out. Yeah, the other thing, which is actually relates to any time before 37 weeks at term or after 37 weeks, but at any stage, if the waters rupture and they're green coloured, that tends to be something that's much later in your pregnancy, to be honest. But this just means that the baby has had a poo, and it can be, not always, but can be a sign of fetal distress. So your main things, again, to recap, is that you've got is the threat of premature labour, the threat of placental abruption, and the idea that your waters have ruptured. So those are kind of the things that you're particularly looking out for at that stage. Okay, other bits and pieces on my notes that I want to go under. Okay, the other thing I want to just explain today is that around about that 24, 25, 26 weeks is also typically when another set of bloods will get done, and also some gestational diabetes testing. So they're the routine bloods, so things like your full blood count. Particularly, please make sure that your caregiver, your obstetrician or midwife, does also check your iron levels, or what we call a ferritin check. Really important. So yes, definitely do that. They will do things like your regular blood count, etc. Or as I say, around this time, you're going to have some screening or diagnostic testing on gestational diabetes. Now, different countries have different policies, different levels, different protocols, etc. But in general terms, if you are low risk for gestational diabetes, which is pregnancy-induced diabetes, it's a temporary form of diabetes. So if you are low risk for that, and there's like a whole list of criteria that makes somebody high risk, but if you're low risk, then, which most women are, then often you will just get to do what we call a glucose challenge or a polycose test. And what they will do is basically give you a very sugary drink and get you to come back an hour later and they'll take your bloods. Now, just one hint and tip on that is, before you go and have that test done, don't have a stomach full of sugar. So that is starch, carb, sugar, or actual, you know, sugary things. So don't be the person that, say, for example, on her way to the laboratory, goes and stops for a sweet hot chocolate and some caramel slice. Don't do that. Okay, because the chances are what's going to happen is that by the time they give you their sugary drink as well, it's going to tip you up to the scales of hyperglycemia and they're going, oh, maybe this woman has diabetes. And then you have to go for further diagnostic testing. So what I always recommend to make it more accurate is that you have a high protein breakfast, so something like omelets and bacon, something like that, and then eggs and bacon, and go and have the test done. So that's your first sugar hit of the day, and then you're going to have a more accurate result. Especially, I might say, if you're not a big person. So if you're a more petite stature, the challenge test that they give you is not really relating to the size of your body. So it doesn't matter, you know, if you're 100 pounds or 250 pounds, you're given the same drink, which is not very accurate. So especially for you petite women, because remember, this is a screen, it is not a diagnostic test. So for you petite women especially, don't fill your stomach full of sugar just before you go and have a sugar-related test. Okay, some women, and now in some places, everybody receives the full diagnostic testing, and in some countries, only those who are high risk receive it. And that's typically called a GTT or glucose tolerance test. And that requires you to fast before you arrive, again, because they want accuracy. But in this case, they'll want you to have no food for 12 hours, usually beforehand, no food at all. And then they give you the sugar drink, and typically they'll test your blood again after an hour and then after 2 hours. They want to know how your body is processing sugar. There's actually, for those who are not aware, there's actually three kinds of diabetes. There's type 1, type 2, which are the ones we're familiar with. Type 1 is the one that people are basically usually discovers in their teenage years, that it's something they've been born with. And then type 2 is the one that often happens more later in life, with is more lifestyle related. And then there is type 3, which is gestational diabetes or temporary diabetes of pregnancy. And it's because your body is working at the hardest levels it's been. Your pancreas is needing to produce insulin at levels that it's never needed to do before, and not everybody's pancreas can cope with that job. And so some women get diabetic in their pregnancy just temporarily. Okay, so I'm just checking my list. I think that is everything. Yes, it is. So that is everything I wanted to go over with you today, of things that you need to be thinking about, learning about, being aware about, once you get to that, 20 to 24 week gestation or thereabouts. So the next time we're going to talk more about sort of 27, 28 weeks. And I wish you all the very best. And look forward to catching up with you next time. Bye, everybody.
We hope you enjoyed this podcast today. Visit kathyfrey.com for lots more free maternity information and downloads. Plus, you can order copies of Kathy's books, browse through her top recommended motherhood products, and check out her popular support package options. kathyfrey.com.